This show is a Hopful Media podcast production.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Hello everyone, welcome to the History of Persia 2025 Holiday Special. Happy Sade! That's right, it's time for the annual holiday special. This one is a little bit off because of some calendar issues we will talk about in a moment. As always with ancient Iranian religious celebrations, there's a million calendars to choose from, and I have to pick a date. Originally, I had intended to go with a date that placed this episode in mid-December, which is why it is the 2025 holiday special. But things happened, not the least of which is the current situation in Iran, and I wanted to push it back to the more popular date of January 30th. Of course, we're now a little past that too, but that was delayed for much of the same reason. I had wanted to at least partially include in this episode some conversation about the current political state of Iran. For those unaware, the nation has been rocked by protests for much of the last month, and these are protests that started back in October, largely resulting from increased economic pressure on the country and constraints placed on many of their key allies. For a moment there was a lot of talk that made it sound like this was going to be the next Iranian revolution. And who knows, it might still be, but that's certainly not the turn that it has taken in recent weeks. Unfortunately, unlike last time something like this happened, with the Jina Amini protests, there's not nearly as much information making it out of the country. That's part of why I kept delaying this recording, because I was hoping that some more information would come to light, especially earlier in the week that this episode will release. There was some stirring about internet activity from Iran coming back. So far, that seems to have been partial and highly controlled at best. So it is still very difficult for people on the outside to get a clear picture of what's happening in the Islamic Republic. Just for an example, my main source of information last time was the Anarchist Federation of Iran and Afghanistan, and they're also cut off from a lot of their information from insiders. So it is what it is. I don't have a lot to update you on, but I do want to start this episode with a little bit of information about that for anybody who hasn't been keeping up with the story. Like I said, it started with protests over economic pangs all the way back in October and has been escalating since then. It spiraled into a massive nationwide protest movement, especially in the ethnically Persian provinces of the country and a bit also into the Azeri provinces. There has not been as much activity in Iranian Kurdistan as there has been in the past, partially just because that community is still exhausted and reeling from the last wave of major protests, and partially because everyone immediately recognized that some of the ethnic political parties with armed wings needed to keep this event at arm's length until more information was readily available. The Trump administration here in the United States was immediately very bellicose about the whole situation and was and continues to be threatening to bomb Iran in retaliation for hypothetically these protests, but mostly for half a century of ongoing conflict between the United States and the Islamic Republic. That aspect of the story is still developing. American intervention would be potentially welcome by some people within Iran and potentially abhorred by others. The United States and Iran have a very complicated history that I will have to discuss in detail on America's Secret Wars someday, but for now, we don't need to get into it. The important thing on that front is that nothing has really happened. Inside Iran itself, thousands of protesters have been killed in the street by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and other government security forces. But beyond that, and the general impetus for the protests as a response to Iran's failing economy, I genuinely don't have much else to say beyond I would sure love if the people of Iran overthrew the Ayatollah and the Islamic Republic regime. But it does not seem like this is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I do think that any American intervention would obviously be disastrously bloody, but half measures like remote bombing campaigns will not get the job done. They will just destroy civilian and government infrastructure alike. One thing that I do want to note as somebody who spends a lot of time talking about Persian kings is the appearance of Crown Prince, technically, hypothetically, King Reza Pahlavi II, the royal in exile son of Mohammad Reza, the last Shah of Iran. Every time there's a major outbreak of protest in the country, he speaks up and urges his people to overthrow the government that chased his family out of power. That's relatively understandable, honestly. But there has been a lot of talk in mainstream news sources about how his calls for action motivated the protests. And to some degree, there are royalists in Iran today. There are people who would like to see the Pahlavis return or a return to monarchy in general. Partly because of how the Pahlavis propagandized themselves, there is a sense that Iran's greatest history happened under monarchy, and it's easy to attach that to some rose-tinted glasses. What did not happen, and what is not the primary motivating factor, is the prince calling for revolution and the people rising up. Revolt and protests were already well underway when he gave a statement. He just happened to give it around the time that things were escalating to a much more violent state. I saw a ton of news articles about Reza Pahlavi speaking out and people responding by escalating the protests. That's not what happened, and it's a disservice to the people of Iran's agency over their own lives and to the actual problems they are facing to give all the credit to a single prince in exile. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes it can feel like everyone else has everything together in their personal lives, their love lives. Whether they're married or dating or single, the truth is, most of us are still figuring that out and finding our way. No matter where you are in that journey, therapy can help you find your way, helping you determine what you want, what feels too heavy, and how you can take some of that pressure off of yourself. February in particular is full of flowers, candy, stuffed animals, and lots of talk about relationships and dating. Whether you're married or in some other stage of your life, you are right on time because therapy can help you find your way and see things more clearly. Leading an imperfect love life is common and normal, but with a little work, you can use therapy to help progress. Everyone is still figuring it out. It's a good thing to take time and take pressure off of yourself and your partner. Therapy can help you identify what's weighing your relationship down and find ways to brighten that relationship again, whether it's for yourself, a couple, or relationships with friends and family. Therapy is an opportunity to identify what's getting in the way and remove those roadblocks. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the US. They do the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your goals instead of searching for a therapist. A short questionnaire helps you identify your needs and preferences, and then their industry-leading match fulfillment rate typically means you get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars for a live session based on over 1.7 million total reviews. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P. For a lot of us, winter is a slow season, and it's a good time to work on something for yourself. There's something very satisfying about learning new things and watching your progress build over time, and this window of the year gives you a little bit of extra room to work with. With Rosetta Stone, you can start small, fit lessons into your day, and see real improvement in learning a new language faster than you might expect. Rosetta Stone has been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you truly pick up a new language naturally. The lessons are simple and easy to fit into your day, whether you've got 5 minutes or an hour. And their true accent feature allows you to really work on your pronunciation, which is great when learning a new language that uses sounds that you're not familiar with. If you are traveling soon or expecting to see your international family, you can make 2026 your Learn Something New Year by picking up a new language. Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, Persian, Arabic, and many more. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in the chosen language instead of trying to fit everything into going back to English. The lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages forever. You can learn one now or choose another one later at no extra cost. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. History of Persia listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. With that out of the way, this is the holiday special. As always, I have a holiday special every year-ish, but not at the same time, because it's not always for the same holiday. The history of Iran is intertwined with so many holidays that it would be ridiculous to just choose one. So far, we have covered Yalda, Nowruz, Purim, Mehrigan, and the modern Cyrus the Great Day. Eventually, I'll probably want to go back to a few of those, especially the first two, but this year is not that year. This year we are celebrating the festival, or Jashne, of Sadeh. one of Zoroastrianism's several midwinter holidays. What else are you going to do when it's freezing cold outside? This one is specifically tied into the significance and mythology behind fire in Persian and Zoroastrian tradition, and as a result, it is also called the Ador Jashne, literally the Feast of Fire. Like basically all of the Zoroastrian holidays, I also have to acknowledge the differences between various calendar systems. In this case, it's even more confusing than usual. We've talked many times about how different Zoroastrian communities across time and around the world have used different calendars, and how that leads to holidays falling on different dates in other calendar systems. As usual, when in doubt, I intended to use the Fosli calendar because it overlaps most directly with the Gregorian calendar, which is the normal one that most of us are familiar with. In this case, there's also just three separate traditions for when to celebrate Sade. Iran's two largest Zoroastrian communities, in Yazd and Kerman, use different dates. The Yazdis place Sade on the 100th day before Nowruz at the spring equinox, which is December 11th, the day I had originally intended to publish this episode. Kermanis celebrate on the 100th day after the Ayathrima Gahambar, an autumn festival in mid-October, if we're going with the Fosli and Gregorian dates. That places Sade on January 24th. Sade is also one of the ancient Zoroastrian holidays that has stuck around in wider Iranian and Tajik culture, but that popular version of Sade is calculated as 50 days and 50 nights before Nowruz, which would place it on January 30th. That is the date that is popularly celebrated in Iran today, and I had thought that perhaps there would be some news developments around it, but so far there's been no luck. So it's coming out now. And here's a funny, probably coincidental date. Sade is mostly an Iranian celebration, and doesn't have significance, or much significance at least, for the Parsi Zoroastrians of India. However, some do acknowledge it, and one book by a Parsi author in 1922 placed the date on the day of Aban in the month of Day. By the Fosli calendar, that would be December 25th. That said, the Parsi Shahashai calendar also only occasionally aligns with the Fosli and Gregorian calendars that way. Interesting to note that basically all of these dates are preferenced as the primary date in historical literature from different points, so it seems to have shifted around quite a lot over time. That said, I'm still doing it today, because today is the most popular date that you are likely to see in any popular coverage, or more accurately, yesterday was. Today, the primary feature of the holiday is constructing and lighting large bonfires, usually in controlled areas if the festivities are in a city, or just open areas of the countryside. At times, the event has been largely constrained to the indoor sanctuaries of Zoroastrian temples, though, depending on the religious and social climate in Iran. Most traditionally, or at least in the best documented historical examples, these fires were lit along the banks of a river or stream, which serves an obvious practical purpose if you are lighting a huge fire in or near an urban area, or your farm. Also traditionally, these festivities could last for up to 3 days, although they're mostly constrained to just one night at this point. Celebrants gather around sunset, and the fire is lit as it gets dark. Before the fire is lit, the Mobeds, Zoroastrian priests leading the religious versions of the ceremony, perform the requisite prayers of the Joshne ceremony. Joshin just means feast or festival, but it also signifies a formulaic Zoroastrian ceremony centered around trays of fruit, flowers, and other ceremonial foodstuffs, usually wine, milk, and water, before the fire, which is ritually purified by burning sandalwood. Before the fires of Sade are lit, the priest recites a series of prayers. Mostly, they are the very common mantras recited at most, if not all, Zoroastrian ceremonies, like the Hunavarya and the Ashem Vohu, both of which are repeated several times in a standard Joshin ceremony. The variable part comes in the choice of a phrynagon, or blessing, which occurs in the middle of the other prayers. Specifically, Sade celebrates with the Daman, 5 verses from section 60 of the Yasna, the Zoroastrian liturgy. I will read the Dahman Afrinagon here and link a PDF with a sample version of the full Joshin recitation in the description. As usual, I am using the public domain translation, adjusted to better reflect the names of some of the core concepts and familiar Yazadas that I talk about regularly. May these blessings approach this house, which are the wise perceptions of the saints, the sacred blessings bestowed through the ritual, their guileless characteristics, together with their recognition of what is due, and may Asha appear in this village, and Kshatra, the sovereign power, together with the benefit and glorious welfare. And with these, the long-enduring prominence of this religion of Ahura, the Zarathustrian faith. And may the divine cattle be now with the greatest speed within this house. Most speedily may the rewarded sanctity and the strength of the holy man be here. Most speedily, as well, Ahura's lore. And may the good and heroic, bountiful Fravashis of the saints come here. And may they go hand in hand with us, with the healing virtues of blessed gifts, as widespread as the earth, as far spread as the rivers, as high-reaching as the sun, for the furtherance of the better men, for the hindrance of the hostile, and for the abundant growth of riches and glory. May Srausha conquer disobedience within this house, and may peace triumph over discord here, and generous giving over avarice, reverence over contempt, speech with truthful words over lying utterance. May Asha gain victory over Druj. As in this house the Amesha Spentas seek for good yasnas and good praises from the blessed Srausha, and as they seek for good sacrifice and act of homage, which is a good offering for salvation, and a good offering in praise, together with a long-continued offering of the entire self, let not then their brilliant glory ever desert this house, nor the bright abundance, nor an illustrious offspring legitimately born, nor that long-continued companionship which is the furtherance of that good blessedness which teaches concerning glory. Unfortunately, the version I'm allowed to read out on the podcast is a little cumbersome and very biblically influenced, so to speak. The Afrinagons are in the common books of prayer called the Corda Evesta. There's tons of translations of those out there if you want to find a better one. And again, I'll put a link in the description. I think this choice of Afrinagon pretty fairly reflects on Sade's place in the calendar. The call for blessings isn't the most unique invocation you'll ever hear, but it thematically fits nicely Sade's role as a winter festival, calling for blessings and peace in the time of the year most associated with discord and strife. Once the fire is lit, festivities begin. Additional prayers are said, traditional music and dances are performed around the fires, and there is usually some kind of big feasting meal. Like most of the Iranian holidays we've covered, the traditional spread usually includes nuts, dried fruit, and other sweets that preserve well in the winter months, meaning basically dough with honey. Main dishes frequently include koresh, which are Persian stews, and delicious if you've never had one. One prayer before the Afrinagan is the Atash Niyayesh, or the Litany to Fire. Atar, or Adar, is both the word for fire and the name of the Yazada who embodies fire in Zoroastrianism. And as you might expect for a holiday centered on giant bonfires, this section of prayer is extra important on Sade. That said, it is actually a core part of all Joshna ceremonies. No surprise in a religion where fire is usually the focal point, but it's obviously extra thematic in this particular case. It is a lengthy prayer with a fair amount of repetition, so rather than reading it here, I'll include a link to the text of the Atash Niyayesh in the episode description as well. All in all, there's plenty of festivity and ceremony involved, but Sade is not the most complex of holidays. Prayers, a big fire, dancing and feasting, more or less in that order. But of course, given the prominence of fire in the celebration, and its importance in Zoroastrianism, it should not come as a surprise that Sade is rich with symbolism. Historically, Sade seems to be a relatively late development in Zoroastrian history, at least as a major holiday. It's not a ceremony prescribed by the Avesta or even referenced there, and references to it existing in antiquity at all only come retroactively. A few early medieval sources reference the celebration as an important event to the Sasanid dynasty, the last family of pre-Islamic Persian kings. Several early Arabic histories and the Persian epic of the Shahnameh reference Sade, and you can clearly see the antecedents of the modern festivities in a version of Iran where Zoroastrianism was still closely tied to the state. The Sasanids formally established new temples on Sade. They made offerings, held feasts, not unlike the temporary bonfire celebrations that are still common today, just attached to a newly established temple instead of a temporary bonfire. One early Muslim critic, Badi al-Zaman, listed it as one of the three most notorious Zoroastrian festivals to be condemned alongside Mehrigan and Nowruz, partly because those three festivals were the ones most successfully transitioning into Iranian cultural celebrations and rejections of Arabization. There were attempts by the early Arab caliphs to abolish and persecute continued celebration of these festivals, which even led to the legal abolition of Sade being listed in early medieval Zoroastrian prophecies as a sign of Iran's fall to the caliphate. Despite this, Sade, Mehrigan, Nowruz, and a few other popular Zoroastrian holy days hung on as popular festivals for Muslim and Zoroastrian Iranians alike. And by the 10th century CE, the local Iranian and Turkic dynasties that had gained autonomy from the caliph openly celebrated a version of Sade in their courts once again. Interesting to note that these early medieval Sade celebrations tended to favor an earlier date, with at least one saying that Laylat al-Milad, the night of the Nativity, was an alternate name for the celebration, associating it with the Christian idea of Christmas. At other times, this was associated with Shab-e Yalda, which I covered in the very first holiday special, all the way back in 2019. Based on some of the earliest references by Muslim authors, it seems that the exact details of the modern Sadeh celebration might have emerged from a combination of Zoroastrian festivals effectively merging a second Yalda feast with Ataragon, the holy day of the fire Yezada Atar, which was just a couple of weeks before medieval Sadeh. Between calendar drift, a gradual disassociation from Zoroastrianism in wider culture, and the simple fact that everyone likes an extra feast, Sadeh emerged over time as a distinct event. At some point in all of this, Sadeh also came to be associated with a specific story in ancient and medieval Iranian culture, specifically the tale of Hosheng Shah and the discovery of fire, best known from its retelling in Ferdowsi Shahnameh, which has been Iran's national epic for about 1,000 years. That said, much of the Shahnameh is Ferdowsi's 11th century CE adaptation of mythic and historical stories that already existed in some form, presumably with some additions and revisions particular to his version. Hosheng was already a character in Iranian myth and legend long before Ferdowsi's time. His name, or rather an early version of his name, appears in the Avesta as Helshongya Paradatta, which evolved over the millennia and transference through several languages to become Hosheng Pishtad. The exact meaning of that epithet, Paradatta or Pishtad, isn't known and has been interpreted in several ways over time, but they all revolve around the same basic idea. It's a title that identifies Hosheng as a progenitor or founder of Iranian culture. The Avestan sources for Hosheng are mostly oblique references to him as a founding figure and important hero or ruler. Like many of the earliest mythic kings referenced in the Shahnameh, it's not entirely clear if every tradition actually interpreted Hosheng as king or just an important person who battled the devas and evildoers. And at least in some interpretations, it didn't really matter if he was king because he was the very first man created by Ahura Mazda. Based on different epithets and descriptions in the Yashts, there are a surprisingly large number of characters who filled that role in different ancient traditions. Over time, as Zoroastrianism became more centralized, these various traditions and folk stories were reconciled with one another. Another character, Geomard or Keomars, was more firmly identified as the first human being, and Hosheng was identified as Keumar's grandson or great-grandson in some cases. Even in the Avesta, placing Keumar's first seems like the most popular version of the story. In the tradition that eventually found its way into the Shahnameh, Keumar's son was killed by the devas, and Hosheng became the next leader after avenging his father's murder and defeating the forces of evil. Hosheng's epithet, Pishtad, retained its importance as being the first of something by identifying him as the first human to be given the far, also known as the Kevarena in Avestan. This was the sort of Iranian equivalent to European ideas of divine right, a blessing from the creator god granting Hosheng, or whatever king happened to be legitimate at the time, sovereignty over his people, and hypothetically the whole world. This was the same concept evoked by the Achaemenids when they declared themselves king of the four corners of the earth. Like most ancient books of world historical importance, the Shahnameh has been translated hundreds, if not thousands, of times into dozens, if not hundreds, of languages. A quick search will get you any number of English editions you could possibly ask for. And yet, the Shahnameh is also a massive work, containing over 100,000 lines of epic poetry. And the vast, vast majority of translations are abridged. In fact, to the best of my knowledge, there is exactly one English translation of the entire text, the work of Arthur and Edmund Warner, a 9-volume monster that started publishing in 1905. As it is both the only complete option and in the public domain, I am going to preference the Warner translation when I need to read from the Shahnameh, something that will get more and more common as the podcast goes on. And to conclude this holiday special, I am going to read Ferdowsi's account of Hoshang's reign as translated by the Warners. Hoshang, a just and prudent sovereign, assumed his grandsire's crown for 40 years. Heaven turned above him. He was just and wise. I lord o'er the 7 climes. Victorious everywhere, my word is law. I practice bounteousness and equity. So hath God willed. He civilized the world and filled the surface of the earth with justice. He was the first to deal with minerals and win the iron from the rock by craft. He gained more knowledge and, inventing smithing, made axes, saws, and mattocks. Next he turned to irrigation by canals and ducts. Grace made the labor short. As knowledge grew, men sowed and reaped and planted. Each produced the loaf whereof he ate and kept his station. Till then men lived on fruit in poor estate, and clad themselves in leaves. Religious rites existed. Kaomars had worshipped God. Hoshang first showed the fire within the stone, and thence through all the world's radiance it shone. One day he reached a mountain with his men, and saw afar a long, swift, dusky form, with eyes like pools of blood and jaws whose smoke bedimmed the world. Hoshang the wary seized a stone, advanced, and hurled it royally. The world-consuming worm escaped. The stone struck on a larger, and they were both shivered. Sparks issued and the centers flashed. The fire came from its stony hiding place again, when iron knocked. The world lord offered praise for such a radiant gift. He made of fire a cynosure. This luster is divine, he said, and thou, if wise, must worship it. That night he made a mighty blaze. He stood around it with his men and held the feast called Sade. That bright festival remaineth as his memorial, and may earth see more royal benefactors like to him. By grace and kingly power domesticating ox, ass, and sheep, he turned them to good use. Pair them, he said, use them for toil, enjoy their produce, and provide therewith your taxes. He slew the furry rovers for their skins, such as the squirrel, ermine, fox, and sable, so sleek of hair. The rovers clothed the talkers. He gave, spent freely, and enjoyed the fruit, then passing took not with him but repute. In life no little share of toil had he, in musings past all count, and grammar ye. And when a better life was his elsewhere, he left the throne of greatness to his heir. The time that fortune gave him did not last. For long Hoshang, the wise and prudent, passed. To thee, to this world, will not give its love, nor will it from its face the veil remove. And there you have the foundational myth of Joshnesadeh. King Hoshang discovered fire while fending off a great serpent, and Ahura Mazda was so pleased by this that he directed Hoshang and his people to worship Adar, the Yezada patron of the new element forevermore. Or at least until the advent of Islam, founding a tradition and a celebration to stave off the winter cold that is celebrated to this day. Or at least, that's the story. Next time we will return to regular episodes, but before then, I want to remind everyone that Intelligent Speech Online is coming up. It's just a few weeks away on February 28th, 2026. I will be speaking as a keynote speaker discussing the rivalry and companionship of the Persian kings and their own nobility over time. This is a con for fans of history podcasts and history podcasters themselves to come and hang out. There will be presentations all through the day, including the three keynotes. Everything starts at 9 o'clock a.m. U.S. Eastern Time, and you can go to intelligentspeechonline.com to buy your tickets. They are $30 unless you use my discount code Persia, in which case that ticket price drops by 10%. Again, I will be speaking as a keynote speaker at Intelligent Speech Online on February 28th. Festivities start at 9 o'clock U.S. Eastern Time. You can get your tickets at intelligentspeechonline.com, and I hope to see you all there. If you want more information about this podcast, you can go to hopfulmedia.com. That's where you'll find things like my bibliography, episode imagery, and additional resources. If you want to hear more of my voice, you can listen to America Secret Wars, where I tell my friends and guests the story of forgotten and overlooked conflicts in American history. And if you want to support my projects, you can go to hopfulmedia.com.co to donate, buy merch, or subscribe to get access to ad-free listening and bonus content. If you don't want to spend money on me, that's absolutely fine. The best ways to support a project like this are to share on social media or leave reviews on your podcast app of choice. So review on Apple, rate on Spotify, and you can find me on Blue Sky at History of Persia and on Instagram at History of Persia Podcast. Until next time, thank you all so much for listening to The History of Persia.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conqueror's Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.